Okay, respiratory disorders, week 11, in the afternoon. Okay, are we back? Welcome back. Thank you for bearing through this lot of talking. I won't do this to you again this semester. I only did it to you one other time. Thanks. I know this is a hard way to get material in. Okay, so respiratory disorders. Remember, we talked about oxygenation. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. And remember that the lower respiratory system depends on the central nervous system, obviously, stimulates and controls breathing. Remember about the chemoreceptors in the brain, the aortic arch, the carotid bodies, monitor the pH and the oxygen content of the blood, remember that. Heart and circulatory systems, we talked a lot about that. Skeletal muscular, remember, it's going to help you. The thoracic cavity can expand and contract. Lungs and bronchi, their movement, right? We know all about that. Impaired function affects ventilation as well as respiration. Remember, there is ventilation as well as respiration. And the result is hypoxic tissue, meaning cells without oxygen leading to tissues without oxygen. They are hypoxic tissues. The lower respiratory tract is generally sterile. Okay, meaning low in the respiratory tract, the lower part of the lungs. There are a lot of protective forces there, including mucus, cilii, the cough reflex, microphages, and the alveoli. So in general, the lower respiratory tract is pretty sterile. But there are infections and inflammatory conditions, such as bronchitis. Bronchitis is kind of an interesting disease in that it can be acute or it can be chronic. It is considered a COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. But I'm sure when you've had bronchitis, and I'm sure many of you have, you haven't really thought about it in those terms. You've thought about acute bronchitis because that's what you had. The risks are impaired gas exchange. If you smoke cigarettes, you're worse, of course. Impaired immunity. So when you have a horrible virus and upper respiratory infection, and then you're in the middle of finals, you're highly stressed, your immune system is completely gone because it's the end of the semester, you could very easily get bronchitis. So the infection that begins as a common cold continues down the respiratory tract, not at all uncommon, okay, becoming viral bronchitis. A non-productive cough that you had with the respiratory infection, the upper respiratory, the cold, becomes productive, generally agitated by cold, dry, dusty air. Chest pain, moderate fever, and general malaise is pretty common. That's the kind of bronchitis that many of us have experienced. That's different than the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease bronchitis, which actually has all of the same presentation, but it's chronic, all right? It's happening all the time. So you're going to diagnose, based on history, clinical presentations. You always want to rule out pneumonia with bronchitis. And rest, fluids, aspirin, acetaminophen, broad-spectrum antibiotics, if the case is bacterial. Only about half of them are, okay? So not necessarily bacterial. Cough meds during the day. Okay. So I'm sure many of us have had bronchitis, right? Yeah. Yes. How about pneumonia? Pneumonia is inflammation of the lung parenchyme. It's the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. And morbidity is highest among older people with debilitating diseases. There are several kinds of pneumonia. Let's see, do I go into that? Yeah. Infectious. Right? Infections can be bacterial, viral, fungal, protozoan, other microbes. So remember, it's not only always bacterial or viral. You can have fungal pneumonia, protozoan pneumonia. You can have non-infectious pneumonia, okay? I know a case of a young man at a party who vomited and aspirated his own gastric secretions and died of pneumonia in 3 days with such an aggressive bacteria. He certainly didn't catch that. He was his own infection, a subclinical GI tract infection. But it was that aggressive, went in the lungs, and it killed him. Took the physicians an autopsy, and I mean, no one could figure out why this guy kept going down. And then how did he get the stomach bug in his lungs? It was a big question, because that was cultured. And I said, well, he was farting, you know. Pretty scary, right? So yes, there's that kind of occurrence with pneumonia. On the other hand, there's a nosocomial, right? Hospital-acquired pneumonia. Patients are immunosuppressed. They're recovering from a surgery for a broken hip, for instance, and they stay in the hospital and die of nosocomial pneumonia. Not at all uncommon. Very common. Simply because they're there in the environment where there are bugs, they're immunosuppressed, and they get it. There are opportunistic pneumonias, like pneumocystic carinii, and immunosuppressed persons often see this. AIDS patients will see this kind of pneumonia. Acute bacterial pneumonia is spread by droplet infection. Okay, so you do see there are infectious pneumonias spread by droplet. Causes an inflammatory response. Alveoli edema, okay? So the alveoli are swelling. And then they form exudates. Okay, so you're getting fluid forming in the alveoli. Now that fluid then fills the alveoli and fills the bronchioles. All right? A lot of fluid. Often there's so much fluid that when you listen to the base of these lungs, what do you hear? Nothing. Exactly. The base of the lungs are consolidated, stuffed, filled. There's no flow of air. Okay, if it's not that bad, if the exudate hasn't gotten to the point where the alveoli are completely solid, what are you going to hear? Crackles, right? Because the alveoli is trying to open through the exudate. So you're going to get some crackles, all right? So know what you're feeling. So we take an x-ray of this person with severe pneumonia. What are we going to see when we have consolidation in an x-ray? What's that going to look like in x-ray? Any idea? What do you think? White. Bottom of that x-ray is going to be white if it's solid. It shows a pretty bad case of pneumonia. Acute onset, chills, fever, productive cough, rust-colored sputum. What's that all about? A little bursting alveoli can bleed a little bit, causing dried blood and giving rust-colored sputum. Okay. Purulent sputum sometimes too, all the gunk from the infection. Pain in the pleura, crackles, limited breath sounds, okay. Dyspnea, cyanosis, air exchange is impaired. Fever, tachycardia, sometimes even altered mental status or agitation. Why? Why altered mental status from pneumonia? Not enough oxygen. Good. Not enough oxygen. All right. Gradual onset over a couple days to 10 post-exposure, fever, cough, malaise, all this, lung consolidation. Mortality rate for acute bacterial pneumonia can be as great as 30% without treatment. That's kind of high. All right. There's viral pneumonias. It can also be spread. Aspiration pneumonia. I told you my aspiration pneumonia story. And there's also walking pneumonia. It's highly contagious. I also forgot. Viral pneumonia. Older adults. Epidemics often are in communities, in senior centers. Flu-like symptoms, dry cough. Okay. AIDS patients get this kind of pneumonia. Carcini pneumonia. Patchy lung involvement impairs the gas change again in abrupt onset. Talked about aspiration. This is an emergency, an emergency section. So if any of your friends are falling over drunk and vomiting, make sure they get out of their own vomit. Lesson for the day. very important. Diagnostic tests, we're going to do, we're going to test the culture, see what's going on. Arterial blood gases to see what kind of gas exchange is happening in the body. Pulse oximetry, again, is going to give you some gauge of how well the body's oxygenating. Chest x-rays. We may even do a bronchoscopy, where we send a little camera down and take a look at the bronchitis. Please, what can we do about it? We can immunize, right? Encourage our patients to get immunizations and medications. Now, we talked about this pneumonia being secondary to surgeries and the common nosocomial infections. So nursing care with suctioning and incentive spirometers are very important and have shown to greatly reduce the occurrence of secondary pneumonias and nosocomial infections in the hospital. So this is very important. When you see that little thing sitting there in the post-surgical patient, have them use it. We provide oxygen and just general nursing care, you know, keep people comfortable. All the general stuff that we do. Let's see, what about tuberculosis? I think I lost my tuberculosis. Nose. Tuberculosis, it's a reoccurring disease. Why are we seeing an increase in tuberculosis these days? What do you think? Not see any. Now we're seeing more and more of it in the hospitals. Any ideas? Immigrants. Yeah, immigrants, high immigrant population come in with chronic tuberculosis. Remember, tuberculosis isn't necessarily a disease of the lungs, although generally it is. What happens is the tubers invade the lung tissue, then they calcify and kind of set themselves apart. Okay, and then the inflammation that's going on inside these tubers, that tissue eventually dies off, but it leaves these calcified tubers that show up on x-ray. So you can always see when someone's had tuberculosis. There is a disease that's caused by being around pigeons that sometimes presents with the same thing, so you have to be careful. But for tuberculosis, you get these tubers that stay. People at risk are what? Those who hang around people with tuberculosis, but it takes quite a bit of exposure. The concentration of the exposure is important. So if you're living in one room with your whole family and your grandparents, you know, that's pretty highly concentrated, and they're there for 2 years and your grandfather's been coughing at you, there's a good chance that you've had a high exposure and may get tuberculosis. Versus a nurse who's caring for a tuberculosis patient and who's healthy and doesn't miss a year. Rarely do we care for tuberculosis patients in the hospital because nurses are generally, in most facilities, required to have a special fitting mask, right? And since we're not fit for them, we don't get through it. At least that's the case in Marin General. I don't know how it is in the other hospitals in the area. I assume it's pretty much the same. But we've had quite a bit of, two or three cases of tuberculosis already this year at Marin General that I've been aware of. So it's spread by droplets. It's not really easy to get. And so your risk really depends on the amount of exposure, time, and as far as just how close you are. So the bacilli enter the airway in a droplet, then they implant. Okay. Then there's a local infection that forms this tubercle. Necrosis of tissue leading to the calcification of this tubercle. And then the inflammation process happens within it, and it dies out, leaving the calcification. Respiratory, you can get extrapulmonary tuberculosis. There are other parts of the body that you can get tuberculosis, although it's most common in the lungs. Fatigue, weight loss, anorexia, fever, night sweats. Okay. Early detection, diagnosis, treatment. And we're all screened for, screening for it. We're all screened. And there's delayed hypersensitivity. We have our PPD test that we get every year, right? You have to have it every year, too, as a nursing student? Yeah, I do every year. See, as I said, and then with an active disease, you're going to have sputum tests, chest x-rays, and are all baseline prior to when they start to treat. Now, be careful of these little PPD tests. Nurses, after being in practice for a number of years, sometimes they're testing positive. So that happens. Don't freak out. It's only your body's reaction because you've had so much of the serum put into you. No big deal. They just then start taking chest x-rays. as long as you're clear, it's not a matter of time. But many nurses, after being, oh my God, I contracted tuberculosis, no, you don't, you're just testing positive. So a false positive among our population is not at all uncommon. Treating tuberculosis is a bit tricky. It usually takes one or two meds, usually a combo. Health promotion, public awareness of how to care for such disease is always important. What about obstructive and restrictive lung diseases, such as asthma, emphysema, cystic fibrosis, and atelectasis? There must be some asthmatics here, right? Somebody, yeah, please. I know, in this room full of people, it's got to be an asthmatic. No asthmatic. Yeah. Yeah, Emily. So, great, you can tell us about your asthma. This collection of diseases is characterized by reduced lung elastic recoil, airway obstruction, with increased resistance, thickening airway walls, bronchioconstriction of smooth muscle, interstitial support sometimes is needed, aging contributes to the overall process. So asthma is a chronic inflammatory disorder characterized by reoccurring episodes of wheezing, breathlessness, chest tightening, coughing. Does that sound right, Emily? No coughing? See, that's interesting. Sometimes there's no coughing. There's wheezing instead, right? Also know that there are coughing asthmatics. You can do either. People think of just wheezing asthmatics, but no, coughing. This morning we had three of them and two coughers and one wheezer. But coughing can be real important. So, Emily, what triggers it? Running. Exercise-induced asthma. Yeah, common. Anything else? That's about it? Do you have it since you were a child? Adult onset, exercise-induced. All right, nice category. Okay. That is certainly one type of asthma. No other asthma sufferers. Yay, okay, good. Tell us about your asthma. Yeah. Yeah, she was saying that she has to take steroids, and they're inhaled in the mouth, and part of the prevention of a secondary infection from the steroids would be a yeast infection in the mouth, because of the steroids in the mouth, so you always have to make sure you rinse them. Remember that with your patients. When you're giving inhaled steroids, which we often give for asthma, have them rinse their mouth because the steroids can cause stress infections in the mouth. Right? When you take these daily, that's a prevention. Before, you still know? Yeah. So you had it as a child and had to take this daily, right, as well as your albuterol, correct? Yeah. And now you're outgrowing it, maybe. But you still get secondary to an infection, right? Very common. That's extremely common. Asthma secondary to a respiratory infection. Many asthmatics have that. And a lot of childhood asthmatics outgrow it. Yeah, and again, there are people who get asthma when they're adults. So it's really the whole thing. Risk factors, allergies, especially in childhood asthma. We have one more asthmatic, right? Somebody, you, yeah. Yeah, tell us about your asthma. What about metered dose inhalers? Did you have those? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're still being treated. So you just take Qvar still. Yeah, post-infection. Yeah, that's real wise. Her physician recommended the Qvar, which is a prophylactic asthma treatment after an upper respiratory infection. Excellent, because so many people who are asthmatics are prone to exacerbations after a respiratory infection, even though this isn't something you take all the time. People that are, as you can see, asthma runs a whole gamut. There's very slight asthmatics to severe asthmatics, people who are on preventive medications all the time, steroids all the time, others who are on, and medications are steroidal and non-steroidal, not all steroidal, and people who just use meter dose inhalers and albuterol to dilate the vessels when they need to. So what causes it? Upper respiratory infections, right? Exercise. What else? What are some other causations or triggers for asthma? Allergens, big time. Big time allergens. Or in my case, it's my son-in-law. I have son-in-law-induced asthma, which is stress-induced. I'm serious. I cannot have dinner with this man without my albuterol right next to me because he just upsets me so much. But luckily, he lives in Boston with my daughter. So, and my daughter's very sensitive to me because she knows he makes me sick, literally. I'm going on Mother's Day, so watch out when I come back. You know, I'll be okay, I hope, if I make it through the asthma attack. I'm sure to have at least one evening. I'm only staying two nights, so I should be okay. And she's real good about taking me out, not exposing me to the hazard. So, truly. So it can be stress. My point being, stress absolutely affects it. And it can be a physical stress, such as Emily with her running and exercise-induced. It can be a stress because you've been debilitated by an upper respiratory infection. Definitely it can be a stress of an allergen, and it can be an emotional stress, as with my son-in-law induced. Oh, absolutely. Yes, environmental pollution. Yeah, yes, sure. Allergens is an environmental pollution, but we should, bring forward that whole category. People living in L.A. with all the pollution have much higher rates of asthma. People exposed to that kind of thing, air pollution, yeah, is certainly a trigger. So as a child, did you manage your own asthma? You two with children, with childhood onset? Did you manage your own as a child, your own asthma? You said you didn't do the meter dose inhaler. Did you do your own albuterol? Yeah. It tends to be genetic, any family history? Yeah. She's on the same, yeah, keep on albuterol, yeah. It tends to be familial. Tends to be genetic, even. Children are taught to manage their own asthma. There's these little meter dose inhalers where they breathe out and they can see what their lung capacity is and take their albuterol before they go out to the playground or whatever. There needs to be more and more education for children. My son, when he was about 5, almost overdosed himself on albuterol because he was with his dad, but we won't go there either. He lived. It's fine. His heart rate was 150 and he was only 5, but it's okay. We made it to that one too. So it's a chronic inflammatory disorder characterized by reoccurring episodes of wheezing, breathlessness, tight chests, and coughing, okay? And the wheezing and coughing, you may not have both. You may have one or the other. Emily's a wheezer. I'm a cougher, you know. So it's not one of the allergens, genetic predisposition, environmental factors, air pollution, occupation exposures, respiratory viruses, exercise, and emotional stress. So what's going on with this? There's some kind of a trigger, generally. Being in emotional stress or whatever. The mast cells in the bronchial mucosa release histamines, prostaglandins, and leukotrienes, causing bronchial constriction. And this is what the asthmatic feels. The bronchi start constricting. And increased capillary permeability. So the increased capillary permeability is going to cause some edema in that area. That mucosal edema then causes increased mucus production. Okay? So then you're a mess. It starts closing off. You're trying to cough, wheeze, sneeze. Okay? And hopefully the meds help. Relaxation helps. Okay? Avoiding the allergen helps. Chest tightness, wheezing. Tachycardia, dyspnea, prolonged expiration, difficulty breathing, all this. All right, what else? People still die of asthma today. In fact, in general, last week there was an asthmatic patient on the floor. So even though it's extremely common, don't take it lightly. People can still certainly die of asthma. Talked about peak flow meters, that's important. Corticosteroids and non-steroidals. Bronchodilators, like your friends talked about, the albuterol. talked about chronic bronchitis. Emphysema. Anybody know anything about emphysema? Had a patient with emphysema? A relative with emphysema? These people are going to their advising appointments. We're not supposed to ever book an advising appointment during the class. Okay. No idea. Emphysema characterized by destruction of alveolar walls with enlargement of abnormal air spaces. Okay, cigarette smoking is a major factor of emphysema. So the large air spaces causes portions of the pulmonary capillary bed to decrease. So if you have less capillary beds in the lungs, what's going to decrease? The oxygen. You're not going to have that blood exchange, that gas exchange, correct? It's a real problem. You have a loss of supportive tissue, the airways collapse, and the air is trapped, okay? Prolonged expiration, diminished breath sounds. I'm going to do CBCs, arterial blood glasses, pulmonary function tests, all that kind of thing. Not a lot of treatment. Exercise program, hydration, treat their coughing, oxygen. Okay? Not a lot we can do for these people. Stopping to smoke greatly helps their symptoms. It can't help the damage that's been done, but it does help their symptoms. What else? These people tend to present with an unusual anterior to posterior dimension in their diaphragm. So where you're smaller this way than you are this way, they're going to be pretty much equal. Okay? Because accessory muscles take over, you get these barrel-chested type of formation because they're trying to breathe. So that, and they're often thin. So a thin, scrawny person with a barrel chest is what is common presentation. What about cystic fibrosis? When I say cystic fibrosis, I want you to think mucus. Okay? Cystic fibrosis is an autosomal recessive disease that affects the epithelia, the respiratory, GI, and reproductive tract, and leads to abnormal secretions in the respiratory tract. And then they have the inability to clear these secretions. So it's a progressive coronary obstructive pulmonary disease. Cystic fibrosis patients used to be limited to children because they didn't live into adulthood. Now with medical management, they can live into adulthood and live into their reproductive years. I cared for a CF patient who was 50 years old. This is like remarkable. That was absolutely unheard of a couple decades ago that anybody would live for that long. When you do your peds rotation, I sincerely hope you get to see children in they have CF. They have exacerbations, they come into the hospital for pulmonary treatments, and we give them pancreatic enzymes. There's a pancreatic enzyme that they don't make. So nursing just facilitates the pulmonary treatments and gives them the enzymes before they eat, and that's about it. And they're living. And the problem with this is that they go on to reproduce, so what's happening to the genes in our population that are going on? So my guess is CF is going to continue in our population. We'll be seeing more of it since these people are living. And that may be fine because we also are learning to manage it very well. And hopefully within your lifetime, in your careers, we'll see CF patients living almost normal lives. I hope so. That'll be great. What about atelectasis? What is atelectasis? This is a condition that's associated with respiratory disorders, not so much a disorder unto itself. It's a partial state or total state of lung collapse and airlessness. So atelectasis is some kind of a collapse. It can come from the structure of the bronchi, compression of a lung by pneumothorax, pleural effusion, a tumor. Loss of pulmonary surfactant. Okay? So obviously you're going to get diminished breath sounds, tachycardia as the body, again, tries to reach homeostasis, reduce chest expansion, all the obvious. Okay? That's atelectasis. What else have I got here? Talked about asthma. Talked about all these things in me. Bronchitis, emphysema. I was way behind on these. cystic fibrosis, I'd like to say lung cancer, leading cause of cancer death in the U.S. Most of the population that gets lung cancer is over 50. They are generally smokers, not always by any means. We're getting more and more cases of lung cancer from people who never smoked. Whether those are radiation exposures or secondhand smoke or a secondary cancer. It's not at all unusual for lung to be a secondary cancer, for cancers to metastasize to the lungs. Most people die within 1 year. I say most of the time they die within 4 months of diagnosis of lung cancer. Don't live very long. This is where we often do prophylactic surgeries. So we would remove a lung tumor or a portion of the lung to enable the person to breathe more deeply and be a little more comfortable their last few weeks of life. The 5-year survival rate is 15% lung cancer. So the morbidity is very high. They're small cell carcinomas and non-small cells. Okay. So a little bit about the GI tract. Now, the morning class said that this PowerPoint did not come up on Moodle for them. Were you able? Was it a problem for you? You got it. Okay. Occasionally, something weird happens, as you all know. Okay, let me get my... We talked about some of these. I just briefly want to go just a little deeper into some of this stuff, make sure you got it. And you're all very familiar with many of these disorders at this point in your career. Okay. Constipation. We know about that, right? We're intimately familiar with constipation now. Medications, fissures, hemorrhoids, obstructions, cancers, all these things. What about diarrhea? What's the definition of diarrhea? Anybody know? Did I give it to you before? Sure, that sounds good. That's part of it. Liquid not being absorbed. That's the patho. Yeah. The definition is basically more than 3 BMs a day, or an increased amount of stool more than 200 grams a day, or altered consistency of stool. Okay? So all that. Any condition that causes increased secretions, abnormal mucus absorption, as you were saying, yeah, we're not getting any absorption. Altered mobility. Motility, right, can increase diarrhea, such as irritable bowel, inflammatory bowel, lactose intolerance. Right? So now we know what that is. Fecal incontinence. At this point in the semester, you've all experienced some Code Browns, right? Yeah, anybody seen a rectal tube yet? Tell us about the rectal tube. Yeah. It differs quite a bit, actually, right? Wise woman. We use it in severe cases of diarrhea, a rectal tube. It's got the dimensions of a garden hose, you know. Reality, but it's soft, so it squishes down. It's not hard like a garden hose, but it's about the same diameter, wouldn't you say? But it's kind of the same plastic as a catheter bag. So it's light. And it goes into a Foley bag, right? Yeah, just goes into a Foley bag. And then there's like a donut that's on the end that goes into the rectum and holds it there. You probably didn't see that part. No. Yeah, it's like a donut, it's on the end, it just sits inside of the rectum, and it stays there, and actually they work pretty well, amazingly enough. When the stool is, when people are having a lot of diarrhea, they continue. So you may have the pleasure of working with a fecal incontinent person, and you may experience a rectal tubes. So let's talk about some of these other problems that we see. Appendicitis. You've had patients with appendicitis, right? Yep. No, not yet. Inflammation of the appendix. 7% of the population, more males, more teens than adults, average age is between 10 and 30. We talked a little bit about diverticulosis and diverticulitis. Now you know, hopefully you've seen some people with those. Diverticulum, do you remember, a little sac-like pouching? Okay. 35% of older Americans have it. 50% have it by the time they're 90. Manifestations are bowel irregularity, diarrhea, nausea, anorexia, bloating, weakness. Okay. Peritonitis may come from diseases of the GI tract. This is inflammation of the peritoneum. When there's a bowel perforation or abdominal bowel surgery, our big concern is peritonitis. That's why many of you who have seen open surgeries of the abdomen, they almost always flush that whole peritoneal cavity with antibiotics, an antibiotic flush, right? Because we want to ward off peritonitis. Sometimes peritoneal dialysis causes peritonitis. It's pretty common. You'll probably come across a patient that has it while you're in school. Diffuse pain, sometimes more localized pain, rebound tenderness, increased temperature, increased white blood cell count. I get to go on yet? There we go. I think I had this fatigue. You saw this before. Duodenal ulcers, inflammatory bowel, here's your appendix, there's your diverticulum. How about Crohn's? Anybody had anybody with Crohn's disease yet? No? It's a subacute and chronic inflammation extends through all layers of the bowel walls, Crohn's disease. They get fissures, abscesses. This is an autoimmune disease. And although it can go into regression, people have it for life, this autoimmune problem. So they have these exacerbations of Crohn's. Often these people have many abdominal surgeries. It's very sad. Because they have the portions that are inflamed of their bowel that are just so infected and inflamed and even can become necrotic, removed. So it's a continuous challenge for them. Ulcerative colitis is a recurrent ulcerative and inflammatory disease of mucosal and submucosal tissue, layers of the colon. Not quite as severe as Crohn's. It can be a huge problem. Then we have intestinal obstructions. Anybody had people with a GI obstruction? No? Yeah. Tell us about it, Christine. He had scar tissue from a previous surgery in the colon that caused the obstruction. I had to go to remove it. So that was a mechanical obstruction, right? Sometimes it's functional. Okay. Small bowel, large bowel obstruction. Then we have all sorts of disease of the anterorectum. Abscesses, fissures, hemorrhoids, sexual transmitted diseases, cysts, sinuses, all this fun stuff, right? And we talked a lot about voiding patterns. We talked about dialysis. Remember that? I'm feeling shunts now, I hope. Remember the peritoneal dialysis? We talked about urinary tract, glomerulonephritis, kidney failure. That's about it. Okay. Thanks for your attention. Let's not do hypertension and peripheral vascular disease today. Because I've talked for like 5 hours. So thank you so much.